This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
Whether you're in the wild card spot or, you know, leading the division, I mean, it's a hard league to win in as it is. Now you take out, you go from 32 to 16 teams, and then the emotional investment you get from the players, especially in that first round, it's why it's what I consider the most exciting round in playoffs in any sport is that first round. It's emotional chaos.
Ugh, emotional chaos. It's like having kids.
Emotional chaos.
Yes.
John Cooper.
Getting ready. Is he talking about chaos for the fans or for the players and coaches?
I don't know.
Definitely for the fans. This is the best time of the year. It's also the most nerve-wracking time of the year.
You know what I was going to say? Welcome to the season that is the equivalent of having and raising a moody teenager. Because the emotions are going to change from day to day, Dave.
And you're not even there yet.
I'm not, but I, you know, experience.
Yes. Were you a moody teenager?
I wasn't moody, but just think about like in the playoffs, most teenagers are moody. I mean, to some level.
You're pretty even keeled, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there were times I got worked up, but I mean, I think the hardest thing to do is to really, in life in general, is to keep a forward-looking path and not to get wrapped up emotionally in things and just kind of take a step back. I always like to look at things and say, okay, don't get overly excited of this. Keep a level head. Like, this is whatever it is. This is great that it happened, but, you know, the minute you start to spike that football and celebrate, it's usually when something happens you're not paying attention to. So, like, for a fan, I mean, even for us, because we're going to be emotionally wrapped up into this. I mean, you could have game one, Lightning get out to a 1-0 lead, Florida storms back, goes up 2-1, and it's like you're just, I've never experienced anything like it when it comes to sports in a 7-game series, because it's a long series. Things can change, and every game is dissected. Everybody's going to throw out the statistic. Well, the road team took the first game. So what are the percentages that they win this series? And it's, and we look at it too. And a lot of times those numbers are accurate. But I think for a fan, if you have high blood pressure, if you are somebody who is emotionally erratic, this probably is not going to help you.
Yeah, make sure you have your high blood pressure medicine.
But it's fun. It is fun.
Fully stocked.
You just have to keep a level head with it, because as good as one of these teams is going to look maybe early on, and maybe they get out to a lead, you just... It is a long series, and there's many things that can happen. And the Lightning have been in this position for a while. So is Florida, to their credit. So I think that's what makes this such an interesting series. And we're going to have, what, Doug Plagan's coming on?
Yep.
Later on in the broadcast.
Doug's doing some work on the Florida side. I think the Panthers might be wrapping up their practice, just as the Lightning are practicing as we speak. We have some updates there. So Doug will be joining us at 12:45 or so.
And we'll,
by the way, speaking of spiking the football and getting emotionally involved, and maybe this is neither of those, but I was struck by the fact that this popped into my email just as you were talking about that. From the Tampa Bay Sports Store, they have come out with t-shirts, Cooch for MVP. So
nice.
I know that. you're on board with that, but they are turning it into a marketing opportunity.
What did McKinnon finish with? Did he last
140
game?
So he got two.
He got two.
Okay. So Cooch wins the Art Ross by 4 points.
So based off of the hypothetical you gave, he didn't have that 6-point night. Do you think Cooch's percentages go up in your eyes?
I think there are going to be some people that were McKinnon all the way, and they're going to stay with McKinnon. I think that it's possible there are going to be some people that were pro McKinnon, but based on all the things we talked about recently, not just yesterday, they may switch their first place vote. I mean, McKinnon's going to be on just about everyone's ballot. The question is, who is getting the first place vote? Who's getting the second place vote? Who's getting the third place vote?
Yeah.
I think Cooch's resume may flip some votes. I don't think we're going to see votes in the other direction. I think if people were kind of leaning Cooch off, they didn't get their opinion changed, and they're going to now vote McKinnon first. I mean, look, Cooch won the Art Ross. He had 100 assists, so he ended up tying with McDavid. McDavid didn't play last night, which isn't shocking. They had a tough back-to-back. But in game 81, he did play, and he had no points. He had no assists. So Cooch and McDavid finished with 100 assists exactly. And we talked about the point gap between Kucherov and the next closest guy, Braden Point. We talked about the fact that I believe is exactly 50% of the Lightning goals scored this year, Kucherov had a hand in. And those are a lot of accolades that you can kind of put in the Kucherov corner. And MacKinnon, as great of a season as he had, and he had a great season, he didn't lead the league in points. He didn't lead the league in goals. He didn't lead the league in assists. He didn't have as big of a gap between him and the next closest guy. He didn't score more than 50% of his team's goals. And I think you can make the argument that Colorado was in a much more secure spot standings-wise than the Lightning. So, again, I think if people kind of hitch their wagon to the MacKinnon horse early and still feel the same way about his impact on his team, and that's fine. Like, they don't have to change their vote. I'm just saying that I think there may be some writers that were leaning MacKinnon that Cooch maybe turned them and they're going to vote him first.
If Cooch wins it, I'm looking at previous Hart Trophy winners since, let's do 06-07 when Crosby won it. I mean, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. This would be the sixth time a Russian player has won the Hart Trophy.
Interesting.
Which is pretty, I mean.
Ovechkin has won it, right?
Well, he won it three times, I think.
Yeah.
And Malkin won it. Cooch did already.
Right.
So, that's, you know, pretty neat.
Yep.
Because I was going to, off the top of my head, I was like, you know, how many Europeans have won this recently? You know, because you had McDavid, Matthews, McDavid, Dreisaitl. Although Dreisaitl is German.
Yes. So
that would probably have
been. But you said European.
That's true. So interesting. You know, just something to kind of look at.
Anyway, we can put that discussion / argument / debate to bed for a while, because the writers will have put in their votes pretty soon. I mean, today was the deadline for the Jack Adams, so I'm guessing that voters have to get their picks in for the Hart and all the other awards here before the first playoff game. We'll get information when they announce the finalists, and then at the end of the year when they announce the actual winner. But next up, of course, is the start of the playoffs, which begin tomorrow. The Lightning and Panthers, of course, begin on Sunday. So for the Lightning, this is not good news. Practice today, no Glendening, no Mott, no Jonas Johansson. So Tompkins continues to back up Vasilevsky, and Cirelli was on the ice, but apparently left the ice early. So Coop may have more information on the status of these guys, and he may have information and not share it, but he may have information and he will share it. So we'll wait and see. But what I said a couple of days ago was, certainly as it relates to Mott, because you're talking about a shot block, I think it's possible that he may not practice today or tomorrow and actually play Sunday. But I would have preferred to have seen him out on the ice today. And this may open the door, Greg, to the possibility that you floated, which is maybe the Lightning go 11-7. Hayden Fleury is also in a red no contact jersey. So if they go 11-7, you're talking about the six that played against the Leafs with Hedman, and you're going 7D.
Part of me says, I think that's what I would do.
If Mott is unavailable, or
if Mott is unavailable, it's going to be an interesting decision, because look, I'm not hopeful at this point right now with Glendening in the short run. Even if he does play, it sounds like he's going to be in some pain. Whatever that injury is, how effective is he going to be?
Mm-hmm.
That makes this whole thing kind of tough, because you can live with somebody, Dave, getting battered during the playoffs while you're playing and just kind of pushing through. It's a tough pill to swallow when you get hurt in the regular season, heading right into the postseason. End. Yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow, because, I mean, really, so durable throughout the year.
Yep.
And that last game, well, you know, second to last, I mean, it just, that's a brutal way to go down, you know, and
on a fluke play too. I mean, yeah, it wasn't even like a dirty, I mean, it certainly wasn't a dirty hit. Not that that makes it any better if someone gets hurt on a dirty hit, but
that part
a weird play.
Yeah. And so you're left, even if he is playing, how effective is Glendening going to play? But, you know, look, every team's going to be facing some tough circumstances. Yeah.
Panthers have Ekblad as a guy who's coming back. I don't think he's played since early March.
What did he have again?
What kind of shape is he going to be in? That's a good question. He's had a lot of injuries over the years. I remember he had the shoulder injury during the offseason. He and Montour both. And they missed maybe the first month and a half. Is that what it was of the regular season?
I mean, look, with Ekblad, if he is playing, and you know how I feel about all of this, is you hit him as many times as possible. I mean, I anticipate this being a very physical, Dave, series.
Yeah.
Playoffs are in general. And then you add the rivalry to this series. And then the way I think the Panthers want to play. But the Lightning have guys certainly who will push back from that perspective. I think it's going to get nasty at times. And I think guys who you know are banged up have to have their head on a swivel. Yeah, even guys who aren't, let's face it.
Right.
But it's going to be that type of series. Probably, I mean, you could make a hard argument. Maybe whoever the Lightning end up playing, if they're able to get beyond this round, this may be the most taxing in terms of everything that's going to be involved in this series. That's what's going to make it really interesting from that perspective. I did want to ask, before we jump into some other topics, at Bolts Radio on X, where special teams, I think it's hard to look past the Lightning and their power play and say they're going to have an advantage from that perspective in most series, if not all of them. Although the Panthers have a good power play, the Lightning's is just phenomenal when things are happening. 5-on-5, though, in this series, do the Panthers have a distinct advantage anywhere?
Based on the regular season numbers, yes.
And we can kind of dive into it. And do the Lightning
conversely? The Lightning had an improvement over the course of the regular season. They are a better 5-on-5 team now than they were at the start of the year, even the first half of the year. And there was an interesting article, Greg, in The Athletic, which I read in the clips today, the Lightning distributed. And they did a pretty deep dive breakdown on the series. I'm trying to find it to see who wrote it. It was Shayna Goldman, Sean Gentile, and Dom Lashusen. So generally those three with the Athletic get into the advanced stats. And I mean, we've been through this, Greg, you know what I think about advanced stats. Advanced stats, like in a vacuum, really don't tell you very much, but if they're used in the context of kind of other information, they can be beneficial. And particularly if they're used in the context of the eye test, they can be very beneficial. So this article basically, when they got to the 5-on-5 section, they basically summed it up this way. The Lightning have improved 5-on-5, and they are above average now 5-on-5 based on the advanced stats, but they are behind the Panthers. And they looked at like offensive zone time and like how you defend zone entries and high danger chances allowed. And a lot of components go into kind of assessing through the metrics 5-on-5 play. And again, like, I think it can be a tool. I don't think it's the be all end all. I don't think it's like a photograph of a picture. I think it's part of a picture. But I believe that what I read backs up what I saw, basically. And what I saw from the Panthers this year was a team that was extremely deep and extremely consistent. I mean, they're one of the highest scoring teams in the league. They have excellent special teams, and they just barely lost out to Winnipeg for the fewest goals allowed in the NHL this year. They have depth within their lineup. They have high-end skill. they are a formidable opponent. So I'm not surprised that, you know, the Lightning do very, very well when you like isolate the power play, certainly, statistically. But I think that's why we pose the question, would anyone actually be picking the Lightning in the series based on what paper tells us on paper? On paper, the Panthers have a huge advantage in the series. The series is not played on paper, though. And when you get into a playoff series, strange things can happen. You know, pressure mounts. Maybe something goes against you. How do you react to that? Maybe you get away from some of the habits that served you really well in the regular season. Maybe an elite playmaker, Kucherov in this case, is able to slice and dice you in a way that most opponents weren't able to do, because most opponents are not Nikita Kucherov. But when you're seeing the same guy over and over and over again, he can be a handful, right, in a series, and he can be a difference maker in a series. So that's not really only what you only asked about 5-on-5. I'm getting more into the overall series, but my impression of the Florida Panthers was in the three games the Lightning saw against them, that was the best team I saw all year with my own two eyes. How they played against the Lightning, though, is not how they played the whole year, and it may not be an indication of how they're going to play in this series. That's why they play the games. That's why we're not awarding the series to the Panthers based on regular season success and how they played in the regular season. The playoffs are a new season. It's just unfortunate that it appears the Lightning will be entering the series not with the full roster that we hoped they would have.
And I think that's fair. And, you know, look, we can get into goaltending. We can get into special teams. I do think who wins 5-on-5, it will be interesting. Although, you know, can we see the Lightning win a series by being very efficient on the power play? For sure. I mean, that could happen. You know, is it something about Florida's forecheck on the Lightning's defensemen and how they handle it? Is that going to be an interesting battle specifically 5-on-5? The newfound depth maybe that the Lightning have going against the Panthers is, you know, face-offs. You really start to get into the weeds, mm-hmm. I think, when you have a team who's pretty evenly matched. Now, some would say, look, if you're going to ask most people, the Florida Panthers are the favorite to win this series. I don't think that's anything new, Dave. I think they've probably earned that, but it doesn't mean anything. I mean, you and I, we've covered this a long time. The eye test, Florida's a really good team. It's okay to go into a series and say the Lightning may be the underdog. If you really want to get into the weeds, I think that can actually benefit the Lightning, a team that accomplished, who would be considered an underdog going into a series. And look, every team uses motivational tactics. That could be one of them. Believe you me. I know coaches kind of look at it and they scoff when they're asked publicly about it. But how many times over the years have we seen interviews where players look at it and say, oh, nobody gave us a chance.
Yeah.
We rallied.
That's what Matthew Tkachuk was saying before the series against Boston last year.
So
I remember hearing him do an interview before game one.
There you go.
And he said, nobody is giving us a chance to win the series.
So are
the shoe is definitely on the other foot this year.
Yeah. Are people going to look at that differently with Lightning? Maybe. I don't know. You know, what you do know is that you have some guys on Florida side who have had tremendous years. Is Sam Reinhart, Dave, a 94-point guy? Is that going to be the equivalent? Are we going to see that equivalency in the playoffs? In a lot of power play goals, 27. But do you look at Sam Reinhart as a 60-goal guy, or did he just have a career year and maybe he cools off a little bit in that first round? We know what Tkachuk can do. Barkov's an elite player. Verhaeghe's got an elite shot. Tarasenko brings some depth.
Mm-hmm.
We know how good Bennett can be on the forecheck. That's a pretty good starting forward group. And then you kind of factor in some of these other guys that they have, and you can understand where it's pretty good. I actually think the Lightning can do some damage on the back end on the Panthers. I do. And I know they have some good players back there. Montour, I like. He actually can be a little dirty from the times I've seen him play Lightning. It doesn't scare me. It doesn't scare me, their back end. It's good, It doesn't scare me. And I think there's opportunities there for the Lightning to create some uncomfortable moments for the Panthers. Now, look, they're probably going to say the same thing about Tampa Bay, and that's fair. And if you told me coming into this series, you know, guys like Radish and Perbix and Lilleberg, if he's in there, they're going to be tested. And even Chernak to a lesser extent. They're going to be tested early and often. And how well they handle the pressure in the forecheck is going to go a long way in determining who wins the series. I don't think enough people are looking at the other side and saying the same thing about the Florida Panthers back end. Because I think there's some opportunity.
That's probably because the Panthers almost finished first in the league in goals allowed.
Probably.
Like fewest goals allowed.
Now, how did they do that? Was that because they were really good defensively, or did they play with the puck a lot?
Probably a combination of all of the above.
But, you know, the Lightning have some puck hounds. You know, this is a series where you talk about the dump and chasing, the Nick Pauls, the Brandon Hagels, the Anthony Cirellis. You know, really just a wearing down, if you can, and hitting the Panthers as much as you can. Braden Point using his speed to be able to create some opportunities there. So, you know, 5-on-5, you may look at it and say Florida has the advantage. Maybe they do collectively. I think there's going to be some opportunities there for the Lightning to go to work on the Panthers if they can get that puck down low and force them to defend. Because we've seen, Dave, not everybody likes to defend. They just don't do it.
What is the strength of the Lightning's game? Forechecking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, that is, when the Lightning are at their best,
yeah,
they are applying relentless pressure and they're playing with the puck in the offensive zone. And they're making the other team extremely uncomfortable. It's unreasonable to expect that you can do that for a full 60 minutes, as we've talked about. And it's definitely going to be impossible for them to do it throughout a series. But if they can do it for some of the time, they will make their opponent uncomfortable / vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So to me, that is going to be a key. If they have to spend most of the series defending without the puck, you are playing with fire, basically. Like, they can't have another game like they had in Sunrise in March when they got outshot 50-16 and ceded all the possession and were shorthanded 7 times.
Do we think anybody is going to, the Lightning are going to have that type of performance in the postseason?
Well, the Panthers can make you uncomfortable too, though.
They can.
I mean,
they can. But there's going to be a certain level of urgency that you come with in the playoffs that you anticipate is going to prevent an outing like that.
It's also a series, so you might have an outing like that. And how are you gonna, navigate through an outing like that? And then how do you recover and make sure it doesn't happen in the next game?
What concerns you the most about this series from the Lightning's perspective?
That the Panthers
that the biggest,
get rolling.
Is
I
that
mean,
the
what
biggest...
do they outshoot Toronto in game 81 after a kind of a flat first period? They fell behind 2-0, then they came out and they laid the hammer down on the Leafs. They outshot them 29-4. And outscored them 4-0. They can do that to an opponent. They can flex their muscles. And when they flex their muscles, how are you going to handle it? And it can't all be on Vasilevsky. Although they're going to ask a lot of him when that happens. And it will happen. It will happen in the series when the Panthers are going to get rolling. And how do the Lightning deal with that?
Yeah. I would agree.
I think an effective way of dealing with an aggressive forecheck, while you may want to try and make a play and catch that other team, and then you get an odd man rush, I think the most tried and true way of dealing with an aggressive forecheck is just chipping the puck out.
Yeah.
The Lightning often get into trouble when we talk about their D-zone turnovers or D-zone miscues or fumbleitis in the D-zone. They like to try and make plays out of the defensive zone. Sometimes, based on the time, score, situation, and opponent, it might be a better option to just clear it and not try and possess the puck up the ice. Make them regroup or go fight a battle in a different zone rather than your own zone.
Yeah.
I'm speaking generally here.
Yeah,
I mean, if you can pass it out of your own end and do it effectively, then you should try and do that. But
who concerns you? Let's ask our audience, who concerns you the most on this Panthers team? Maybe collectively, what concerns you? Where do you think the Lightning have the advantage? Dave, is it a slam dunk anymore that the Lightning have a considerable advantage in net?
Well, that Athletic article basically said what you said yesterday or the day before. They gave an edge to Vasilevskiy, but it was a smaller edge than it has been, which is partly due to Vasilevskiy's season, but partly due to Bobrovsky basically elevating the last couple of years. I think that's fair. I mean, Bobrovsky's a good goalie, and he has had some playoff success in his career.
Had it against the Lightning.
Yes, you know, he did.
A different team, and I understand that. And look, if you feel like tough moments make you better as an athlete, as a person, Bobrovsky certainly has done that. And mentally, he would or should be as strong as you could possibly want. And let's face it, Dave, they signed him to this contract to be in this moment, didn't they?
Yes.
To be that guy. Now, you know, whether it took him a while to get there and live up to that, it's probably fair to say. But, you know, arguably, are we looking at the two most successful Russians in NHL history who played
in net, you mean?
Played the possession? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably won't get talked a lot about. I think that's an interesting storyline, how two teams who are looking to win a Stanley Cup, they're led by two Russian goaltenders who may go down as 1-2 in terms of where people view them. From that perspective, I think Vasi is going to go down as one of the best we've seen ever. But I think it's fair to look at the goaltender situation and say, okay, how much has Bobrovsky closed the gap,
right,
on Vasi? Because I don't think Vasi's play, based off of what we saw towards the end of the year, Dave, declined. I think it just took him a while to get back. And so,
and the numbers back that up.
Yeah. Do I think he still had some shaky moments playing the puck? Yeah. I don't know if that's ever been his strong suit. I don't know how you strategically take advantage of that. You know, if you're looking for every little small detail, which coaching staffs will do when it comes to the playoffs, I don't know how you take advantage of that. I think it might be more on Vasilevskiy's end where, you know, less is more, trying to play the puck. If you have an opportunity to freeze it, freeze it. I think where he sometimes every once in a while will get in trouble is probably trying to do too much, and the other team's able to take advantage of that. But I think what we saw towards the end of the year, Vasi looked more like Vasi. And I think that is encouraging for the Lightning in a game like this that we think is going to go, you know, maybe the distance. But I'm open to,
yeah,
to people who don't believe that. And we can have those conversations and breakdowns as well. I mean, we know about Barkov. We know about Verhaeghe because we've seen him. We know about Tkachuk. I mean, I just, you know, Evan Rodriguez is a guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you know? Now that they got Tarasenko, Rodriguez slots into the third line winger position. I mean,
perfect place for
player.
Him.
Yeah.
Perfect place for him. I mean, he's got speed. He actually has a pretty good shot. I mean, he's a plus 26 this year.
Yeah, well, they're on a good, he's playing a good team.
For sure. For sure. But even like, you know, a couple of years ago when he was with Pittsburgh, 19 goals.
Yeah.
16 last
year. He's a good player.
He's a good player. And, you know, their depth maybe a little bit more than Tampa Bay. And those are the type of things you're going to look at. And we'll ask Doug Plagans about it. Like, where does he see the advantage for Florida? And I think that's one of those things where, you know, how do you handle it? How do you handle it from a Lightning's perspective? Certain matchups, certain defense pairings. Who do you want out there against the Barkov line? Those are all things we're going to start to find out in a couple of days. That'll be kind of interesting. Who does Florida have, Dave, go after, you know, the Braden Point line? You know, who has that job? Because
Forsling and Ekblad on
defense.
I mean, Gustav Forsling is
a good defenseman.
We've talked about him. He's probably their best overall defense.
Plus 56.
Yeah, and that's not a one-off. Like, he's usually incredible. Way up there in plus minus.
Right.
No matter what kind of team the Panthers have had. Like, they've been a President's Trophy winner. They've been a team that barely got into the playoffs. This year, they were near the top of the standings. Forsling is consistently very, very high in terms of plus minus. But at the forward position, I'm not sure how they want to work the matchups.
Yeah, and that would be like, do you go strength on strength?
Mm-hmm.
Would you go Barkov's line?
Lightning did have Lightning did have Duclair with Point and Cooch at practice today.
Okay.
Which means you have Stamkos, Cirelli, and Hagel until Cirelli left the ice early. So for the Lightning, that would probably be the shutdown. Forward line, I don't know what they're going to do on D, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Chernak and Perbix as a pair. Are you going to put Perbix on the left side against the most dangerous offensive line for Florida?
Do you think the team, I guess maybe, are you surprised they haven't gone back to Perbix playing on his strong side?
Well, they must be seeing something that they like or are comfortable with. And maybe they just really like Dumba Lilleberg too.
Well, that's what I was going to, is that more about other people than it is, hey,
I don't know.
We like what we, because I think anybody that has watched Perbix play on his offside, you're not feeling comfortable. At least I haven't. I don't know how anybody else feels. I mean, it's pretty clear you're putting him in a position where he's not as effective. Now, are you doing that because you feel like other guys are better served playing on their strong side more than him?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sacrifice you're willing to make? I don't know. But that's this is a really tough spot for him to be in against a team that's going to come hard.
Now, if the Lightning go 7D, maybe they put in three lefties. It would be DeHaan.
I'm going to make a bold prediction. I'm going to say they're going 7D.
And maybe Perbix moves to the other side.
Yeah. I don't feel comfortable. The stakes are too high. Perbix didn't show me enough playing on his offside that he could handle the intensity he's about to experience with this type of team.
Yeah.
Just in. And that's not a knock on him. That's an observation. By the way, is this a revenge game or series for Anthony Duclair? It may be.
How revenge? I think he understood why the Panthers moved him, but I mean, he left on very good terms.
You always want to put it to your team. You always want to, I'm sure Verhaeghe's probably thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Verhaeghe has been a money playoff player in the series where the Panthers have done well. In the two series where the Lightning beat the Panthers, Verhaeghe was quieter.
Yeah.
Which was a big key to why they won those series, honestly.
Hell of a player.
Yep.
You want to get into some questions? Anything else you want to bring to our attention?
Let's get to questions.
Dan O'Rourke says, we have speed advantage. Play Penguin style. Dump it down the ice and send Hagelin after it. Or Point. Or Sherry. Dan, you're bringing out the Penguins of 2016.
Carl Hagelin doesn't play for the Lightning.
Does Carl Hagelin play anymore?
No, he retired. HBK, right?
Phil Kessel, Nick Bonino. You know, that style of play, and that basically happened for a half a year when Mike Sullivan came up, and the Penguins just, they were fast, and they played in the other team's zone, and that's how good they were defensively because they had the puck. Can the Lightning do that? Are the Lightning built that way? I don't know, but I like the strategy. I like the strategy. When Pittsburgh did that, it was pretty clear they had a distinct advantage speed-wise on a lot of teams. I think most teams are kind of caught up to where Pittsburgh was back in 2016, 2017, where every team's basically pretty fast. And I think if the Lightning can do that, as Dan, as you heard me say, I want to see a forecheck. I want to see them hit the Panthers defenseman as much as possible. And I think the Lightning have certain guys who can play that way. I mean, Braden Point can control the pace of the game with his speed. Kucherov can do it by slowing things down. But I think Hagel is one of those guys that can use his speed to just create a lot of chaos. So are there some similarities there, Dan? Yeah, but I think probably on the flip side, to be fair, Florida could say the same thing too.
Yeah, I think Florida is a hard team to pin back in their own zone indefinitely. They wouldn't be so good defensively if they didn't have the puck a lot. And they do have the puck a lot. Their metrics are very impressive. But yes, if the Lightning can spend most of the game with the puck in the offensive zone, they would sign up for that, for sure.
Metrically speaking, how about that nerdy term that I just
used?
Metrically speaking.
Well, I teed it up for you.
Have you looked at the analytics in terms of like the really important stats and looked at like where Florida ranks?
Very highly.
On a lot of, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like I this is an elite team Tampa Bay's playing. Would you agree with that? I mean, as much as it can be an elite in a parity-driven game, I mean, this is as close to a complete team that you're going to face.
Well, the stats are very impressive. So,
do you agree with that?
I told you, goals against, they finished second, tied for first, but they gave Winnipeg the advantage. Connor Hellebuck won the Jennings Award, which I thought was always a shared award. Then I saw that a goalie must play a minimum of 25 games. So in Hellebuck's instance, because he plays so much, he got the award all by himself. Offensively, Panthers are 11th. I'm a little surprised by that. I thought they would be top 10, but still, 11th is pretty good. Power play, 8th. Mm. I remember they have the top power play goal scorer in the NHL in Reinhart. Mm-hmm. Penalty kill, 6th. I mean, these are all extremely solid numbers. How about 5-on-5 goals for, goals against, 3rd, 1.30.
Face-offs,
oh,
they're even
so, yeah, face-offs, yeah, they're 51.3%. I think Barkov, I can actually look up and see who their best guy is. Barkov is usually quite good. I don't know if he's actually first on their team. So give me 1 second. Look that up. Barkov was at 57.3%. So he's not only the best on their team, he is one of the top guys. That's higher than Glendening's percentage. Anton Lundell. So Lundell had kind of a, I hesitate to say he had a disappointing year. He didn't have a disappointing year. He just didn't have maybe as productive a year as a lot of people would have thought. He's had a good year in the circle, though, 54.9%. And then Stenlin, their fourth line center, is over 50%. Bennett is at 45.5%. So he has not had a great year in the faceoff circle.
But they're, I mean, those numbers across the board, except maybe one where they're outside of the top 10, this is pretty elite.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there aren't many flaws.
Yeah, it's not like offensively they're 28th. Yeah. I mean, they're 11th. So
right. And you know they can score too. I mean, that's like one of those things where, you know, even if guys had down years, you'd still look at them and say that's a pretty great offense.
Right. And so, there are advanced stats, Greg, that tell you more than what I'm about to tell you, but it's informative. Shots for per game, 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
Shots against per game, 3rd, meaning 3rd fewest. So when you talk about like possessing the puck against the Panthers, I mean, the shot on goal total doesn't tell you everything, but if you have a huge gap between shots taken and shots allowed, that means that you have the puck. Generally, there's a reason why they were in the running for the President's Trophy, but we don't want Lightning fans to get discouraged or despair about this. I mean, look, the Lightning could win the series. I just think they're going to have to play at a very high level, and maybe the opponent, knowing who the opponent is, will force the Lightning's hand and almost push them to that level.
Yeah, that's fair. Steven says, I don't think we're putting enough emphasis as a fan base on how much potentially losing both of our top PK guys could hurt us. In my opinion, how they handle the PK and the potential absence of Luke and Tyler is going to go a long way in deciding how this series goes.
Well, that may be true in the fan base, according to Steven. Is that who it was, Steven?
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about it as soon as those injuries occurred on the show. Yes, the Lightning's penalty kill will be affected adversely if Glendening and or Mott are unable to play.
At NHL Miss Paint, who do I talk to at the Lightning to tell our guys to not engage with Tkachuk's post-whistle antics? I feel like AC Mott will get rowdy at the wrong time. He gets chippy. There's no doubt about
it.
And I, look, I, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you have to control your emotions. Of course you do. But I'm also not playing in game one of the Stanley Cup Finals, and you know how things can happen, particularly at the end of games. Guys trying to do certain things to maybe potentially send a message the other way. I don't know. If you had to ask me, is Tkachuk going to do some stuff post-whistle? Yeah, you bet you.
Yes,
yeah, he will. I mean, he is. And kind of where things go. I mean, Dave, it wouldn't surprise me if early in the game he did it. As you know what they say, to send a message.
Mm-hmm.
Tkachuk is sending a message to the Lightning that he is not afraid and will be in Vasi's face the whole series. And, you know, that's kind of the narrative people would like. But that's probably something he and Bennett will do.
That is part of the playoffs. It is part of a playoff series. But it is emphasized MS Paint or whatever the handle was. Sorry, I didn't commit it to memory. It is emphasized to players before, during, and in between games in a series to not take dumb penalties.
Yes. And look, penalties, we know that's going to be a big deal. We would be remiss without saying, because I know he had an up and down year. A series like this, you miss a guy like Mikhail Sergachev.
Yes.
Because when Sergei is playing at his highest level, Dave, he's controlling the puck, he's making good outlets, he's mm-hmm. physical, he's strong, he's another guy you can throw on in there on the back end that can help
agreed
clear things away. And again, I know he was inconsistent this year, but he is a guy, let's not minimize the loss of one of your top four defensemen, and that is a tough pill to swallow. The Lightning will rebound, they'll regroup, but it's a tough ask to move on and play without him in a series like this. Nikita says, is Cooch the clear MVP? Yes, but we have more important things to worry about now. How many of us believe we will see a very hungry Bolts team come Sunday? The pressure is on Florida, and we love playing the underdog. I am so ready.
Well, all of that is true. So the Lightning will be hungry, and they will be the underdog, and the pressure will be on the Panthers. This is what I mentioned when we were talking about the Bruins and some of the questions surrounding the Bruins, which are real. Like, they're going to have to answer those questions in this series upcoming against Toronto. I think the Panthers have far fewer questions. Actually, that's one of the questions I have for Doug Plagans when he joins us in a couple of minutes. I do believe this, though. You earn your bricks in the playoffs, but also you need a little bit of luck. Maybe those are statements that run contrary to one another. But everything that could go right for the Panthers went right last year on their run to the final. Then they had to sit for like 8-9 days, and they kind of lost their juju, and they ended up losing in 5 in the Stanley Cup final. Whatever ride they were on, the break adversely affected them. But from the starting point of game 5 against Boston, down 3-1, to beating Carolina in game 4, every big play, just about every big play, fell on the Panthers' side of the ledger. They won every overtime game. I mean, just think about it. Like, Bobrovsky makes the save on Marchand in the closing seconds of game 5. I think Montour scores the 6th attacker goal the final minute of game 7 to force overtime. How many overtime games did game 1 go between Florida and Carolina? 4 overtimes? They won that game. Like, and they won a lot of overtime games. That is not sustainable from year to year to year to year to year. Now, they have a very good team, and they may not need any breaks to go their way. But I think last year, some of their run was fueled by, whether you want to say they earned their breaks or they got their breaks, whatever. A lot of really good teams don't get breaks. The Lightning didn't get any breaks last year, in a series in which I thought, by and large, they outplayed the Maple Leafs. Pucks off skates, seeing eye shots in overtime. All the big plays went in the Toronto direction, for the most part. At the biggest moments in that series, the big plays went on the Toronto side of the ledger. So when we're trying to handicap a series, it is very difficult to predict which team will be the beneficiaries of the big plays. that could swing a series. And we are going to see at the end of the series if the big plays went more on the Florida side or the Tampa Bay side. And if it went more on the Tampa Bay side, I know what I'm going to believe, which is the Panthers kind of regressed to the mean after kind of leading a gilded life last year in the playoffs. We've seen it from the Lightning. The Lightning had that incredible franchise record in playoff overtimes, and now all of a sudden they can't win an overtime game, even though they have a really good team, right? So Doug is ready. So Doug is going to join us and
bring Doug in.
Yeah, let's bring Doug in. So Doug, I was talking about your run last year, and it did seem like every big play from 3-1 down against Boston through the sweep of Carolina, every big play went pro Panthers, whether it was an overtime goal scored or a big save or a sixth attacker goal to get a game tied. What did you make of that while the run was happening? And how much are the Panthers going to need to rely on something like that again this year?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. I know we're all excited to get this series going, and Sunday at 12:30 can't come around fast enough. But I think the first thing that I think of when I think about the fact that on that run last year, the Panthers went 7-0 in overtime games, I think it was something that developed in the second half of the season. The Panthers last year just got really comfortable in situations where maybe a lot of other teams would not be comfortable. So with their backs against the wall, close games, games on the line, having to come back late, things like that. And we saw them come through in a lot of those situations. There's also just we see it across all sports, and maybe there's not always a metric for it. It's not something you can always quantify, and maybe, in again, something you can't quantify, but maybe Matthew Tkachuk ended up being the playoff league leader in it. But it was just that it factor, rising to the occasion when the game's on the line. And another guy that you all over there in Tampa know well, Carter Verhaeghe, has kind of developed into one of those guys where when the game's on the line, when the team needs a goal, whatever the situation might be, he seems to just like the puck on his stick in those kind of situations. And he's been able to thrive and pick up some big goals. So I think if you were to look at it, it's just a trait that this team developed, being comfortable when a lot of teams might be uncomfortable. And then they have some guys right there at the forefront who just find ways to rise to the occasion when the team needs a big play.
Doug, does Florida have a perceived weakness at all?
I mean, it's I obviously, you guys know I work for the team. I'm biased, but I'm gonna say no. They're a really deep team, and you don't get to the. You look at the 16 teams in the playoffs. Everybody's good now, and we've talked about it before. 16 out of 32 make the playoffs. Once upon a time, 16 out of 21 made the playoffs. You can't fake your way into the Stanley Cup playoffs in 2024. But I think if you were to look at, you know, something that would be a key focal point in this series, and we know that it's going to be emotional, it's going to be physical, there are going to be penalties taken on both sides, but I think both teams are probably going into this saying, we don't want to give the opposition any more power plays than we have to, because that could work against either team if one team ends up with a significant advantage as far as the power plays are concerned. So I think if there was one focal point, plain and simple, it would be staying out of the box. But the way this Panthers team has been able to defend all season long, they finished one goal behind the Winnipeg Jets in the race for the Jennings last night. It went down to, of course, why wouldn't it keep with the theme of this entire NHL season? It went right down to the final period of that Jets-Canucks game last night. Had Vancouver scored one more goal, Sergei Bobrovsky and Anthony Stolarz would have at least had a share of the Jennings, with the Panthers allowing the second fewest goals in the National Hockey League. But that illustrates right there, the team defends well. The goaltending's been solid all season long. The Panthers are deeper going into this playoff year than they were this time 1 year ago. So that's up front, and that's on the back end. So it's a Panthers team that personnel-wise is more equipped going into this playoff run than they were a season ago. Everybody is holding down their end of the bargain, and they also have something else that they didn't have 1 year ago, and that's some of that know-how. They've seen what it takes to get to a Stanley Cup final. A lot of these guys have, so you certainly can't put a price on that.
What is the status of Aaron Ekblad, and if he's able to play in Game 1, do you expect him to kind of slot back into the exact role that he had before this last injury?
He's going to be, per Paul Maurice, just heard from a little bit ago, he's going to be good to go. So, and Carter Verhaeghe returned for Game 82, so he's obviously good to go. The Panthers, knock on wood, as far as we know right now, looking pretty good in the health department. So, so we're excited about that. But I would expect everybody to come in and play the roles that we're accustomed to seeing them play. But yeah, everybody seems to be, knock on wood, getting healthy at the right time.
How much has Bobrovsky, do you think, Doug, closed the gap, if that's the right word, to a player or goaltender like Andrei Vasilevskiy? In other words, you could look in most instances every year that the Lightning have a decent to a very sizable advantage in net, but Bobrovsky feels like maybe he's turned that corner. How big of an advantage do you still think that is for Tampa Bay, if at all, in this series?
I would guess both teams are probably going into this loving their goaltending situation. Andrei Vasilevskiy, just as an observer from afar, you guys know better than I, but it seems like he's gotten stronger as the season went on. I know March was his best month of the regular season, and that March included a superhuman performance against the Panthers, where I think he stopped something like 47 shots in a game here at Amerant Bank Arena in Sunrise. So obviously he's getting stronger as the season's gone on, coming off not having a training camp and not starting his season until the end of November. But Sergei Bobrovsky turned in a Conn Smythe worthy performance last year, and obviously it's easier said than done, but he did it, and he took what was working for him last spring and took it right into this season. And I would be shocked if he wasn't in that group of three finalists for the Vezina Trophy. I know Connor Hellebuck seems to be the favorite. Thatcher Demko's probably got a seat at that table, but Sergei Bobrovsky certainly should be a finalist for the Vezina. So he's coming off an outstanding season. So both teams, I'd imagine, based on track record, based on what's happened lately, based on what they've seen, the performances they've seen the guy turn in for their teams over the years, both teams are probably really excited about where their goaltending is this time of the year. But just speaking in terms of seeing Sergei Bobrovsky every night, he's been absolutely dialed in and so consistent all season long. And again, it sounds simple, but he really did just pick up right where he left off last spring. And he's been one of the Panthers' certainly most important players this season. And he and Anthony Stolarz have been a great tandem. They've really fed off each other night to night. So goaltending is obviously, I believe, and the Panthers believe, it's a huge position of strength and something that gives this team confidence every single night.
Doug, it seems crazy to think that any team in the NHL could have had Gustav Forsling. He was on the waiver wire when the Panthers got him. And there have probably been some Lightning fans listening to our show who are looking at me, figuratively speaking, cross-eyed when I've been singing this guy's praises. I'm like, he's the most complete defenseman the Panthers have. And we're talking about one of the top teams in the league. When you watch him, you can see it. His plus-minus numbers bear that out. But you watch him every minute that he's on the ice. What has made Forsling such, and I'll use this word, a dominant two-way defenseman in the NHL?
Well, that's what he is, and he's getting he's finally getting the credit league-wide and nationally and in the media and everything that he deserves. But it all starts with his skating. His skating ability is off the charts, and because his skating ability is so good, he is never out of position. Now, the thing that's so impressive with Gus Forsling, and we'll get to the plus minus in a minute, and I know people have different interpretations of that stat and its importance in today's game and everything like that. But first of all, the skating ability. Also, on top of that, he's playing big minutes against the other team's best players much more often than not. So he's been a top pair guy. He's been in a shutdown role. He chips in offensively too. So there's really no hole to his game whatsoever. And on top of that, the guy is tough as nails. And I'm not talking about tough in terms of he's going out there racking up penalty minutes and getting in fights every night. And, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, he's blocking shots. He's using his body effectively. He's throwing hits. He'll take a hit to make a play. And he just, he's just the epitome of toughness and everything you want in a hockey player. And the plus minus, he finished the season plus 56. Only five active players have had a plus 50 season in the National Hockey League, and only two active defensemen, Devontaeves being the other one, last season have had plus 50 seasons in the NHL. Gus Forsling, plus 56, highest plus minus for an NHL defenseman since 95-96 when Vladimir Konstantinov did it in Detroit. So he did something that was historic this season in that regard, at least for the modern era. And I know with plus minus, like I said, everybody's got their different interpretations of it in today's game, but I've always been one to say, you know, if it's middle of the road, sometimes it's a reflection on the team. You know, there might be different ways you can look at it, but if you are off to the extreme one way or the other, which Gus Forsling is, led the National Hockey League, plus 56. That means that things are generally going right when you're on the ice for your team, and you're doing something right, to put it plain and simple. So again, his game has just elevated to an absolutely elite, superstar type of level at this point. And the Panthers got him on that extension too this year, so they're excited that he's going to be in the fold for a long time to come.
Doug, last question on my end. Nikita Kucherov has been incredible this year. Who matches up, in your opinion, against the Kucherov line?
Now, it's going to be interesting to see, and maybe that some bearing on that comes with, when the Panthers are home versus when the Panthers are on the road. But, you know, if it's anything like last year's run, I know the Panthers were pretty comfortable with all of their groupings in terms of who they might have been out on the ice with at a given time. There are a lot of different ways we could take that. We may not know until game one starts, whether it's the Barkov line, whether it's the Bennett line, the Lundell line. Again, we'll see how the coaches decide to play it, and we'll see if they make any changes when you're home versus road. But again, that's one that's going to be worth monitoring. I don't really have a lean one way or the other at this point, so we'll just have to see how the game starts on Sunday.
Well, Doug, we appreciate you, and I'm sure we'll talk to you throughout the series. It should be a lot of fun. I think this is maybe the most anticipated one, at least in the Eastern Conference, and I know a lot of people are going to be watching it.
That's a lot of excitement. It seems like one of those series where everybody across the hockey world, if their team isn't playing, they're going to be focused in on this series. And I know we love that. And Paul Maurice was just talking about it, how exciting it is for hockey in the state of Florida. And it's going to be a great series. And there's going to be a team from Florida moving on to round two, going around deeper in the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is going to be huge for hockey in Florida one way or the other. I know we're just excited for this series to get going. And we'll talk to you guys Sunday afternoon.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there he goes. Doug Plagans joining us here on the broadcast, and we always appreciate him stopping by, and I'm sure we'll talk to him as the series progresses, but I think a lot of us are just ready for game one to get going. Then we can really evaluate how things are going to play out, partner, but I know you're excited. I am as well. I will talk to you on Sunday because that game's at 12:30.
Yes.
Three games at noon, and then you and I will recap it on Monday, and then we'll look ahead to game two.
Which Tuesday. We have the schedule.
You want to give it real quick?
Yeah. So game two Tuesday at 7:30, game three Thursday at 7, game four Saturday at 5, earlier start at Amalie Arena. And then the start times for potentially games 5, 6, and 7 still to be determined, but they're going every other day after that. Game five Monday, game six Wednesday, and then 2 days before a potential game 7, which would be played basically 2 weeks from tomorrow. We'll see if we get that far.
All right. Partner, great job this week. And now it's the best time of the year. We'll talk to you.
You too. Enjoy it.
You too.
We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Dave Mishkin there. Steve Ersnick, our producer. Doug Plagans. Thanks to him for coming on. We always appreciate that. And of course, all of you guys who listened throughout the week, we hope you stay with us on Sunday, starting Sunday, for the playoffs. We've got some big plans for the coverage. Hope you stay tuned for that. I'm Greg Linnelli. You've been listening to Power Lunch on Lightning Radio.